Thank you, Paul, and good evening, everyone. So, you may hear again some of what Paul has just said, I'm afraid, because we did not compare notes beforehand, but that's fine. I'm a big fan of tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you've told them. So, you've told them what we're going to tell them. It's all good. So, this mission that the government has to deliver warm, energy-efficient homes is a real large-scale challenge, and it's above all, not simply a matter of the technical solutions that are required or even the money that's required to do it. It's also a socio-technical challenge. And I was Googling for an image this morning, so I have borrowed this, this image, that tries to describe socio-technical systems. And what you'll see is that the technology is only one of many components on here. And that actually most of the components on here involve people. So it's about society, it's about individual people, it's about organisations, it's about how people behave, it's about the workplace. And we really have to recognise that if we're trying to do something on such a large scale, that it is a socio-technical problem that involves people at the centre of it. And those people include householders, homeowners, the retrofit supply chain, the product manufacturers, local authorities have a key role to play. So it's a real mixture of different kinds of people. And depending on whether, you know, most of us are at least householders, many of us are homeowners, but we also have official professional hats that we wear as well. So our answers to some of these issues might be different depending on whether we're being, you know, Jennifer Schooling, Professor of Things, or Jennifer Schooling who lives in a 1930s semi. And I'm just going to come back to some of the points that Paul was making about the complexity of our housing stock. So I was giving a talk, just a quick aside, I was giving a talk the other day to a bunch of postdocs and PhD students in biology. Now, clearly, I know nothing about biology. I gave it up at 14. So I was telling them about my kind of random walk through my career path. And I said, you never know how what you're doing today might come in useful in the future. And I'm now reaching back into some work I did when I was at ARUP back in 2008, but I did update the dates. So this is data that's come from the 2023 housing survey, which is the most recent one I could find. We have 25.4 million households, of which 64% are owner-occupied, 19% are privately rented, and the rest live in some kind of social housing. So we've got 16 million individual homeowners, plus 4.7 million in the private rented sector, and 4 million in some kind of housing association or local authority accommodation, which means that we are dealing with upwards of probably 18 million property owners. And we're trying to wrangle all of them into some kind of coherent, coordinated action. As Paul alluded to, they are huge diversity of age. So nearly 9 million of our homes were built before the end of the Second World War. Another 9 million or so were built between the Second World War and 1980, and then a much smaller proportion built since 1980. So we have a huge range of building codes. Many of them were built before building codes were even invented. We have a huge range of skills and technologies that are available at the time that these houses were built. And we also have a huge range of different property types. So we have everything from small and medium-sized terraced houses, semi-detached, detached, and bungalows. And then we have converted flats, so these are any of the previous things that have been converted into flats, or purpose-built flats, and high-rise buildings. So we've got a lot of different morphologies to grapple with as well. So this is a challenge of bringing lots of people together into to tackle a problem that is kind of multivariate in its form as well. So how do we do that? Well, I think there's a few key things that we need to do in order to really deliver this. And again, it's nearly all about people for me. So we've got to build confidence in the supply chain because we need a skilled supply chain. We've got to invest in the skills for those suppliers. And we've got to build trust among those many, many property owners and build trust and confidence for them. So how do we do that? Well, I think the first thing is that we've got to aggregate demand. So I've called this community buying schemes. And I'm not saying this is the only way to do this, but I think this is a really powerful approach. So one of the things we've got to do is aggregate demand and potentially segment demand by locality and property type to give the supply chain the confidence to invest in upskilling, recruiting people, building their capacity. If we do that, for example, through some sort of community-based scheme, then we can let frameworks, for example, to groups of vetted supply chain practitioners, and that gives us a framework of trusted providers, which again helps the householders, who are the next people in the category, to feel that A, they've got a trusted supply chain, B, they can get advice from as to what needs to happen to their home, because, you know, even I, as an engineer, a fellow of the Institution of Civil Engineers, I look at my 1930s property, I'm like, well, I've got a rough idea what to do, but I don't really know where to start. I certainly don't know who to employ to do it. And it all falls into the too hard pile for me. So if you can go to some sort of scheme, then you can buy into that scheme, and actually all of the hard work is done by someone else. But also there's a reputational piece there, because if the supplier doesn't do a good job, you can complain to the organisation that recruited that supplier to do that work for you. So they've got a reputational skin in the game, that they're not just going to walk off the job and go, oh well, because they've got a whole load of other jobs relying on this. So it creates confidence for both householders and for the supply chain. Now, there's a number of different ways that you can do this kind of demand aggregation. I've talked about community buying schemes here, but one of the reasons that I think that is so powerful is because actually I've had experience of it myself. So in Cambridgeshire, where I live, the county council invested in or facilitated a community buying scheme for solar power. It was so easy. Basically, they leafleted every house, presumably in the county. If you were interested, you sent them an email or you rang them up. And then they asked you some questions about your property. They had a quick look, presumably on Google Maps, to check if it was pointing in the right direction. And if they thought you were likely to be suitable, then they would send a survey around. But before they sent the survey around, you had to commit something like £80 or something, just to kind of filter out people who might be just mucking about. And then if the surveyor came round and said, yes, we could do this, and this is the number of panels, et cetera, that would fit, then you were into the system, and you could either accept the quote or not. If you didn't accept the quote, you lost your £80. If you did accept the quote, it went towards the cost. And that meant that I now have 6 solar panels on my roof. If I'd had to do that from ground zero, even though, you know, I'm someone with a PhD in an engineering subject, and I in theory, you know, can grapple with the complexity of the system, I wouldn't have done it. But it was made so easy for me. All I basically had to do was send an email and cough up £80, and then obviously save the money to do the big job. But I didn't have to do any of the rest of it. And when something went wrong with it, the guy who'd installed it came straight back out to check it, because he had reputational skin in the game, and he really wanted to have a good reputation in this work. So I think, as I say, most of what I've talked about is not to do with technology, it's to do with people. It's about making sure that people have confidence to invest, that they have the mechanisms to engage with each other, and they have the mechanisms to actually get on and do the job in a way that is as reduced friction as it's possible to be. And I think that was everything I wanted to say, so thank you very much for your time.